The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Venezuela, which was a lot of that was an enemy when I left, an enemy, and they were ready to fold. Now they're supplying us with oil. I wouldn't have even thought to buy oil from them. But more importantly, their crime rate is down to 60. It's down by 67%. And the reason is they've taken their gangs and their criminals and they brought them into the United States. Oh, wait till you see next year. They'll be pretty soon. They'll be at no crime, zero crime in the entire country of Venezuela, the beautiful country of Venezuela. In fact, we'll be going to Venezuela for vacations. They're sending prisoners, murderers, drug dealers, mental patients, terrorists. The worst of every country is coming into our country now. They're coming from the Congo, Yemen, Somalia, Syria, all over the world. They're coming there. Country changing, country threatening, and their country wrecking. They're destroying our country. They're destroying, you know. We can drill and we can get the oil going. We can get, but this is a tough one. We're going to end up with the largest deportation in American history. We have no choice. This is an invasion of our country. And by the way, hundreds of thousands of people between the drugs that come in the border and all of the death that's brought into the border in so many different ways, hundreds of thousands of people are being killed in our country every year. If we had a war with a country like Mexico, we wouldn't lose people like that. This is bigger than a war. Joe Biden is so weak on the border that other countries are now publicly taunting and extorting him by pumping migrants across our wide open border. Just this week, Mexico's president declared that they will keep the flood of illegal aliens pouring in. They're going to pour into our country unless Biden hands over $20 billion a year just to sit down. Do you think he'd say that to me? $20 billion a year they want just to sit down, and he wants it fast from U.S. taxpayers. Lift sanctions on communist Cuba. That's what he wants to do. So that's the end of the Miami Cuban vote for Crooked Joe Biden, I can tell you that. He wants to lift the sanctions on Cuba. I had sanctions in Cuba to a level that they were willing to make a deal at any time. We would have had that election. If that election were a legitimate election, we would have had a deal with Cuba. We wouldn't have had Russia attacking Ukraine. And we wouldn't had October. We would not have had October 7th in Israel. I can guarantee you that.
There's Donald Trump in Wisconsin yesterday talking about the bloodbath at the border. He used the word again. And of course, the talking heads, their heads exploded. He can't use that word because if he does, it's a call to violence. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. I mentioned the bloodbath comment. We put together this little montage from yesterday. This is clip 11.
Under Crooked Joe Biden, every state is now a border state. Every town is now a border town because Joe Biden has brought the carnage and chaos and killing from all over the world and dumped it straight into our backyards. On day one, I will seal the border and we'll begin the largest domestic deportation operation in the history of our country. And if other countries say they won't take them back, we're not going to take them back. I will say that, here they come. You're just going to hold on to your britches, because here they come. They're coming back. This is country changing. It's country threatening and it's country wrecking. They have wrecked our country. But I stand before you today to declare that Joe Biden's border bloodbath, and that's what it is. It's a bloodbath. They tried to use that term incorrectly on me 2 weeks ago. You know, it's all about misinformation. That's all they do is.
And look at what the RNC did today. They introduced a new website. It's called BidenBloodbath.com. They're basically blaming him for what's happening on the border. I mean, is bloodbath now the new campaign slogan the Republicans are going to be running on in 2024?
Going back to the bloodbath question, the former president used that terminology a week or two ago, but he's talking about it again today. What's the White House reaction to the use of that term, bloodbath?
But we have to denounce. Our response is we have to denounce any violent rhetoric that we hear, certainly from our leaders, right, that tears our country apart. It could tear up our country apart and puts our fellow Americans in harm's way, in danger. So we have to denounce that.
Trump using the word bloodbath, it puts Americans in danger. Certainly, I mean, the illegals coming across the border, murdering Americans, they're... The French lady, the fake administration, the dear leader, they're not, Congress even, Congress, they're not doing anything to deal with this danger. They just let it happen. And then they go after Trump for his rhetoric. That's right. Our leaders, notice how she said that our leaders shouldn't be talking this way. Trump's a private citizen. Trump's been out of the White House for more than 3 years. And then look at what's happening. Look at what's going on in the nation. This is from the Washington Examiner. It says the Biden administration's program of secretly flying illegal immigrants directly from Latin America to U.S. cities dumps over 90% in hubs of two southern states governed by the president's harshest border critics, according to government data. You've heard about this. Joe Obama bringing in over 300,000 migrants on plane. Forget about the open border. Forget about the millions just pouring across the southern border. Joe Obama's flying them in. It says some 347,000 migrants allowed into the secretive system fly directly to airports in Florida and Texas. They're flying them into Florida and Texas. You might remember when Ron DeSantis sent, I think it was 50 migrants, maybe a little more, up to Martha's Vineyard. And I mean the regime media. They went ballistic. How dare he do that? How dare he send them to the millionaires in Martha's Vineyard? He's using it as a political weapon. A ploy. And here there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands. They're flying them in to Florida and Texas. It's not just Chicago and Denver and New York City. No. It says it's unclear how many of the immigrants fly on to other U.S. cities, though the government has said there are over 40 final destinations. This early evidence suggests that a great many of these inadmissible alien passengers, probably a majority, initially land at international airports in Republican Governor Ron DeSantis's Florida. So here's a little bit of payback coming to Ron DeSantis from the dear leader. You send 50 migrants to Martha's Vineyard? I mean, the dear leader's got a home up there, right? A mansion. Then I'm going to send hundreds of thousands to Florida. And you can see why. They want to turn those red states to blue states. It's all part of the attack. Listen to, this is Fox News yesterday on illegals killing American citizens, clip 4.
So Brian, the Federation for American Immigration Reform FAIR did an analysis on the amount of illegals that have killed Americans. And they're up under Joe Biden. There is a bloodbath going on within the country. And I think the point that the president made last night when he had all these sheriffs that were behind him as well, they don't like him using that language when it comes to the illegals that have killed people. But he goes, what language do you want me to use when there's criminals killing Americans?
There is a bloodbath. He's correct in using that term. This is what he said, the president, that is, President Trump. He said this in Wisconsin yesterday, clip 8.
Look no further than the small town of Whitewater, Wisconsin. Does anybody know Whitewater? After being inundated with Biden migrants, this tiny town now has a budget shortfall of over $400,000.
Their public schools are straining with hundreds of new migrant students who don't speak a word of English. Their police force is being diverted from traffic stops to migrant crime, our favorite new term, migrant crime. It's a new category of crime. And their town is becoming a hotbed of cartel activity and illicit drugs like nobody's ever even envisioned before.
It's all over the place. Every state is a border state, as he has been saying. Every state, including Wisconsin. Look no further than what's happening right here in Wisconsin. This Washington Examiner piece, speaking of the migrants, they're just flying in by the thousands. Begun in October 2022 for Venezuelans and expanded in January 2023 to Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, and Colombians. We'll just fly you in. Doesn't matter where you're from. We'll put you on a plane and bring you to Florida and Texas. The program approves flight travel authorizations for aspiring illegal border crossers still in other countries to instead arrange commercial airline passage for themselves over the southern border and then receive temporary but easily renewable humanitarian parole from CBP officers at the airport. They're there to take care of you, give you the cash card, give you the hotel stay at the Four Seasons, and you're good to go. Got everything you need. No wonder they're all over the world, and most of them young military-aged men. Yeah, coming from Haiti, from Nicaragua, from Venezuela. Wide open access. Listen again to Donald Trump yesterday in Wisconsin, clip 9.
Now the border is 100 times worse than it was in 2016. There's never been a border so bad. There's never been corruption and rape and pillage and loss and people coming in at levels that nobody's ever seen with the people where they're coming from, criminals. Criminals like never before just pouring into our country. We have no idea who they are. So when I fixed it in 2016, I believe this could be like 100 times worse. That was a bad border, but that was bad, understandably bad. This is at a level that nobody's ever seen a border like this. We've taken in, I think, at least 15 million people. That's bigger than almost every state. And I think by the time we end, we might almost be, by the time we get this lunatic out of office, how he can like this, by the time we get him out of office, he's going to be at close to 20 million people he will have allowed into our country, mostly unchecked, unvetted. We have no idea who they are, where they came from, but we're going to find out. It's a big problem.
20 million people. Wow. It's an invasion. It's a fundamental transformation of the United States. If you don't have this this book yet, America Under Attack. We offer it without cost, without obligation. Just got to send us your mailing address. Call the 800 number there, 1-866-930-3024. You can get to this book and all of our literature at our website, thetrumpet.com. That's Donald Trump from Wisconsin or in Wisconsin yesterday. This is from the Center for Immigration Studies. It says, President Joe Biden's Department of Homeland Security refuses to publicly identify the dozens of U.S. international airports for which it has approved direct flights from abroad for certain inadmissible aliens. At least 386,000 migrants through February have been allowed to fly to interior U.S. airports as part of a legally dubious admissions program the administration launched in October 2022. So we're pushing toward 400,000. It's not enough that we just let them walk right in at the southern border. We're flying in almost 400,000 illegals and just letting them stay. And they won't even reveal where they're taking them, what airports they're flying into. It's all carefully concealed. It's under the cover of darkness in some cases. America under attack. That's what we're seeing. As I say, people so mad at DeSantis. A couple years ago when he sent a few of them, just a handful, to Martha's Vineyard. And now look. How much is riding on this presidential election? November 5th, the war in 24. Listen again to Donald Trump from yesterday, clip two.
Because if we don't win on November 5th, I think our country is going to cease to exist. It could be the last election we ever have. I actually mean that. We don't win. I think this could be the last election we ever have. That's where our country's going.
Everything that the radical left says about the threat to democracy, about the last election, it applies to them. The communists have nearly completed their takeover. The communist infiltration of the United States. It was prophesied. I've referred you to that chapter, and he was right. He was right. There's a chapter that goes by that very title. That communist infiltration. Herbert Armstrong was talking about it back in the 1940s, the 1950s. And now look at where we are today, and people are openly acknowledging this. That's right. They see it. They see that this is a Marxist takeover of the United States. This is from the American Thinker. It's just basically pointing out what my father brings out in Great Again. That's another booklet. Again, we offer it free without cost, obligation, nothing. But my father in that book points out how that Donald Trump, I mean, for all of his flaws, he does a really good job of exposing the evil, of exposing the attack. And that's what this piece is about at American Thinker. It says a handful of rhino members of Congress have either resigned or announced their intentions to do so in the coming weeks or months. They claim this is in protest to the now all but certain nomination of Donald Trump as the Republican presidential candidate. And it talks about, you know, Lisa Murkowski. She's a rhino. She supported Nikki Haley. She voted to kick Trump out of office. She voted for the impeachment conviction. It says here some Republican. Did any Democrat, she's supposed to be a Republican. It says here, did any Democrats vote to not convict Trump or vote in favor of Kavanaugh? She was right there with the Democrats. And of course, another point that this guy makes here is that, you know, one thing about the Democrats, they are unified. I mean, they are all in it to get Trump. They're all in it to steal elections. They're all in it to prevent, you know, a Trump-nominated Supreme Court justice. Oh, yes. They'll make up hoaxes. They'll tell lies. They'll do whatever. And everyone gets behind it, including some like Lisa Murkowski. Good old rhino. It says here, post-Ronald Reagan, the GOP tried morphing from the party of Reagan to the party of the Bushes. Dole, McCain, Romney. It says the Bush 41 gave us a tax hike and a lousy campaign against Bill Clinton. Bush 43 provided a 20-year war in the Middle East under false pretenses. The current domestic surveillance state. Yeah, that's right. Bush 43. You can look at what he did. You can thank him for homeland security. The Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts and almost Harriet Myers. Those were Bush nominees. McCain was afraid to utter Barack Obama's middle name, and Romney couldn't defend himself from accusations of being mean to his dog, killing his employees, not paying taxes for 10 years. He couldn't defend himself against those lies, those hoaxes. Because, you know, you got to be nice. You got to be nice to the Democrats. You've got to meet them in the middle. You've got to compromise. Yeah, McCain and Romney, they were sure good at that. And what did it get them in the end? they were losers. It says here, nature abhors a vacuum. In the absence of serious Republican candidates or leaders since Reagan served up Donald Trump. Love or hate his personality, he teed up conservative policies that benefited America and her people in an American first manner. So you see, I mean, this war continues. Look at these rhinos quitting the House in order to try to give control over to Hakeem Jeffries. It's unbelievable. These people are traitors. How would Barack Hussein Obama, we'll say his middle name, would Barack Obama get away with what he got away with were it not for rhinos that were quite happy to just say, hey, we'll swoon right along with Chris Matthews. We'll swoon with the regime media over the dear leader. He can do no wrong. Sundance says this over at Conservative Treehouse. He says, during this interview with Dan Ball, Representative Matt Gaetz explains why he cannot support the effort by Marjorie Taylor Greene to vacate the chair and remove Speaker Mike Johnson. She had that motion to vacate. It was mostly just for show. There are no votes to actually remove Johnson. But it says here, as outlined by Gaetz, there are two or three specific Republicans, former Democrats, who will vote to support Hakeem Jeffries if the opportunity arises. It says, with all of the exits from the GOP House team noted, it will be a struggle to keep the House in Republican control in 2025, even with a resounding victory by President Trump. I mean, even if there's a red wave, there's so many rhinos. Now, you think about what Donald Trump has exposed. None of this would have been exposed. Even if he wins in 2020, they just keep stabbing him in the back. They just keep joining on with the Democrat cause. Get Trump. But now, I mean, yes, there's a struggle. Yes, it's a war, the war in 24. But look at what Donald Trump has exposed. Just one man. One individual. He comes along with good conservative policies and he says, I'm going to do this to help Americans. And they hate him. Well, Americans don't hate him. But the establishment does. The Uniparty does. The swamp does. Listen to Donald Trump again from Green Bay yesterday, clip 7.
But you know what? The good news is we've seen how bad they are. And because of that, there's more spirit now than ever before. Because of that, we'll be able to do things to make our country great again that we probably could have never really done had it been a more traditional turnover. So it's going to be great.
He's exposing all the rot in the establishment, in the swamp, in the deep state. We had an article, I think it was just posted today, at thetrumpet.com, the Bush era of the Republican Party ends in 2024. I love that quote by Tony Busby, the attorney representing Ken Paxton. The Bush era in Texas ends today, he said. It ends today. You can see why they go after individuals like Paxton and like Trump. At the Trumpet, it says, why would Republicans collude with the FBI and stage a phony impeachment of a Republican attorney general? Why? Well, because there's a lot of Bush Republicans that hate true conservatives, that hate MAGA supporters, that hate Ken Paxton. It says here, Paxton represents the biggest threat to the establishment Republicans. Donald Trump, Paxton stopped ballot stuffing in Texas during the 2020 presidential election and pursued a Trump-friendly agenda, undermining the Bush family's influence. It says the Bush family has controlled politics in Texas and the Republican Party for over 30 years. That's right. Donald Trump's out there campaigning. You don't see Bush anywhere. Like you saw last week, you saw Obama, the dear leader. You saw Bill Clinton. I mean, he's from the 90s. And then you saw the fake president, Joe Biden. I mean, they're all as one. And it just keeps going more and more radical. Marxist through and through. But they believe. They're unified. Meanwhile, Bush, he's nowhere to be seen. He's not going to campaign for Trump. Are you serious? No way. Because Bush, I mean, he's the traditional conservative, right? He's the establishment Republican. He's the rhino, a good old rhino. And there's a lot of people that are right in lockstep with him. This article at The Trumpet, it says, the Bush family has controlled politics in Texas and the Republican Party for 30 years, from the presidency to governorships to intelligence agencies. They have guided the GOP, out of the Ronald Reagan era into the uniparty era. The Bush family has made the GOP Republican in name only. Poor Ronald Reagan, I mean, he wanted to try to unite the conservative America First Party together with the establishment Republican Party. So he brings in Bush 41, and look at how that turned out. Bush 41, he had a mediocre presidency back in the early 1990s. He couldn't really rise in opposition to Bill Clinton. And then his son comes along. It's amazing how much you just look at this history in a much different way just because of Trump. I mean, I can remember when the so-called war against terrorism started, and you think, well, boy, at least George W. Bush is in there, and he's going to have some kind of, he's not going after the head of the snake. And we pointed that out at the Trumpet magazine straight away. But you think, how would this be? How would this have turned out if Al Gore would have successfully stolen the election in 2000? Now you look at that and you think, they're all the same. Really? They are all the same. And so Trump comes along, and George W. Bush, of course he's not going to campaign for Donald Trump. You can't do that. He's exposed the uniparty, hasn't he? It says here, in a sense, the Bush family fundamentally transformed the Republican Party. This paved the way for Barack Obama's fundamental transformation of America. It's a good point. I think Abraham Blondeau wrote this piece. It's at thetrumpet.com. I don't know if it's the feature at the moment, but you can go to thetrumpet.com and track this down. The Bush era of the Republican Party ends in 2024. In so many ways, you see, the Bushies, they paved the way for Obama. And you know, Bush will come out of retirement to take a photo op with Obama, Michelle. Oh, yeah. But not the Trumps. What does that tell you? It tells you everything you need to know. The Bush era prepared the way for Obama's fundamental transformation through compromise and complacency. In 2024, the era is officially ending. that's right out of America Under Attack. That's right. America Under Attack. God is clearing the way for a Jeroboam type to come on the scene. I mean, we're in the midst of bitter affliction. And only God can save us. It's temporary. It's not going to be long lasting, but God will intervene. This article, it's actually not in the article, but Abraham just sent me some of the content that actually got edited out. Welcome to the editorial department. They are brutal. They will take a knife to your content. I've been there. No, that's good. They're wonderful, the editors and proofreaders that we have in our editorial department. But he goes through Eric Holder, Obama's wingman. He was appointed by Reagan as a judge in the D.C. Superior Court. Bill Barr worked for the CIA from 1971 to 1977. It was Bush 41 who appointed him as Attorney General in 1991. Robert Mueller. He has ties to so-called conservatives, Bushies. Victoria Nuland, she just recently announced her retirement, but she served as the Deputy National Security Advisor to Vice President Dick Cheney. You know about Cheney. You know about his daughter, Liz. She hates her some Donald Trump, that's for sure. Lisa Monaco, one of Obama's closest loyalists, served in several positions under George W. Bush from 2001 to 2007. She was an assistant U.S. attorney in the D.C. United States Attorney's Office. And it goes right on down the line. Avril Haines, another Obama loyalist, worked under George W. Bush as a legal advisor to the Department of State. Karl Rove, the Koch family, Paul Ryan, the Romneys. You go right down the list. You think about how the devil deceived an entire church. I mean, this is talked about in Raising the Ruins. I haven't mentioned this in a while, but this book here, this gives you the history of Satan's attack on the worldwide Church of God. The Apostle Jude, it says in Jude 1 and verse 4, "For there are certain men crept in unawares, who were before of old ordained to this condemnation, ungodly men, turning the grace of our God into lasciviousness," or a license, in other words, to disobey and denying the only Lord God and our Lord Jesus Christ. See, look at how the devil used weak, weak ministers in the worldwide Church of God to deceive the whole church. They wouldn't make a courageous stand for the truth, for the true doctrines that God had revealed through Herbert Armstrong. They were too weak, just like so many Rhino Republicans are today. Yeah, I'd rather vote for Biden than to vote for that man, the bad orange man. Pretty amazing. Well, we've got a few extra clips. Let me see. What should we do with the remaining time that we have left? How about if we just take a moment to regroup here during a promo, and we'll come back with something. We'll come back with some surprising content. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
If Trump were to be convicted in this case, what kind of penalty potentially could he be looking at?
You know, he could be looking at jail. This is one where the judge, I think, is going to be looking at the rule of law to see how other people were treated, other people with a similar criminal background. I think this is an area where Donald Trump's pretrial behavior is going to be relevant. If you have someone who's contrite, if you have someone who shares that he's respectful of the rule of law, that this was an aberration, that is something that the court can take into account. But if you think that the defendant actually is running basically as an outlaw, and is basically thumbing his nose at the judicial process, and it shows no sign of remorse, and essentially is a recidivist, those are factors that a judge can consider. And
There's Bob Mueller's vicious, vicious pit bull, Andrew Weissman, talking about a respect for the law. Trump's not contrite. So Merchant, never mind his conflicts of interest. Trump can't even point that out because they've got a gag order on him. He can't point out all the connections to Adam Schiff, the daughter of the judge, connected to Schiff, millions of dollars at play. It's like Jesse Waters said last night. Look, the judge's daughter's not 7 years old. She's 34. She's 34. And here's Trump and his team pointing out the obvious. This is so corrupt, top to bottom. How can these people get away with this? Well, they're still the lawfare still isn't going the way that these communists want for it to go. There's this this bill in Nebraska. I'm not sure if they're going to follow through, the House there or the Congress, the state Congress in Nebraska, and make it to where all, you know, just like every other state, all five electoral votes go one way or the other. To this point, it's basically been four red and one from Omaha gets a blue vote. And the communists are panicking right now because if it comes down, if it's a close race, we got to get that one vote from Omaha. Nebraska, the governor's pushing this effort to change that. Listen to MSNBC freak out over the prospect of Nebraska, and then there's some other clips in this montage as well about the next presidential election. Clip one.
The state legislature is going to look at it, but if that changes, that takes away Biden's best path to win, because if he wins Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, yep, but loses the other swing states and no longer picks up the one in Nebraska, 269. That leads playbook this morning, the alarm among Democrats that this is possible.
I think this is what the modern Republican Party has become. They're now changing the rules in the middle, trying to benefit themselves. This is the Donald Trump hath wrought. In the middle, this changing the rules 200 days before the election is ridiculous. The easiest pathway to victory has always been the Midwestern three states combined with Nebraska. Something tells me they're not going to get away with it this easy, and there will be a national outcry for trying to change the rules here.
Trump neck and neck in every swing state. According to the new numbers from the Wall Street Journal, Trump leads Biden in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Nevada, and Pennsylvania by figures that are all within the poll's margin of error. The poll also finds negative perceptions about the economy remain a problem for Biden. 63% of swing state voters say the U.S. economy overall is not so good or poor condition, while 36% say it's in excellent or good condition.
But when these polls, like the Wall Street Journal one, land in the White House and he's losing in all the battleground states.
No, he's not losing in all the battleground states. He's coming up and he's even or doing better. So, you know what? Once people start to focus in and they see their two choices, it's obvious that Joe will win this election.
All right.
It's obvious. No, he's not losing. She's perfect for the regime, isn't she? Here's this Wall Street Journal poll. Trump's lead. He's crushing it in every state, and he's tied in Wisconsin. And, of course, that's probably why he's in Wisconsin yesterday, because he wants to win that state as well. But he's crushing it through and through. And there they are, just lying about how well Joe Biden is supposedly doing. Yesterday we talked about just how crazy this argument is over who's religious, who's righteous. This was Joy Reid last night as she carried on with this theme, started at the beginning of the week by the New York Times, the Church of Trump. Now, the Trump people, never mind what we did, how we swooned for the Obama religion back in 2009. Oh, yeah, we saw him as the Messiah. Never mind any of that history. I'm old enough to remember it, right? He was the Savior. He was going to save the earth. Now Trump comes along. He gets the widespread support of the evangelical community, and heads begin to explode. This is dangerous. This is not religion. This is a cult. This is Jim Jones. This is David Koresh. How many madmen can they come up with to compare to Donald Trump? This is clip 12.
That Donald Trump was never particularly religious or church-going is news to absolutely no one. But now Trump is using his own brand of positive thinking and prosperity gospel to dupe his self-proclaimed Christian supporters into believing that he is the second coming of Jesus himself. His own brand of the power of MAGA thinking, fusing his own perverse messianic message into his rallies, which alongside the passion of the MAGA faithful, gives them a church of the cult of Trump air. He's also taken to ending his speeches with a sermon of sorts, proclaiming that they are one movement and one family under God. But now that he's running for president so that he can stay out of prison, he's really ratcheted up the church-like energy at his rallies.
Wow, one family under God. That's dangerous. That's very dangerous. I've got another montage here of the regime. I mean, you see this attack, this audacious attack against Benjamin Netanyahu. You talk about election interference. Donald Trump rightly points out that that's happening right here at home, right here in the United States. But look at this demonic push. I mean, and during a time of war, you had these humanitarian aid workers, I guess. They died in the crossfire. And, of course, the international community rises as one to denounce Israel. You'd be hard-pressed to find any language as strong as what you're about to see following the October 7 massacre. No denunciations of Hamas, certainly not. They're justified. I mean, they're occupied, so they got to fight back, right? Listen to this, clip 10.
Those vehicles couldn't be marked more clearly. We're looking at them in this video. Those were aid workers. You have other aid organizations now pausing their efforts, saying we don't know that it's safe for our aid workers to go into Gaza, given what happened with World Central Kitchen. You know, the president, and this has been bubbling up from behind the scenes for a while, President Biden, frankly, is furious at Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Okay, I'm so sick of hearing how upset President Biden is. The buck stops with him. If he wants to stop arms sales, if he wants to stop the bombs that are indiscriminately killing civilians, he can. He has the power. Until those checkpoints are working and aid is going through, we don't need to be giving any more arms sales or money. It needs to stop. It needs to be conditional. It's ridiculous.
The victims of yesterday's strike join a record number of humanitarian workers who've been killed in this particular conflict.
Israel wants the world to see this as simply a fog of war accident. But even that raises all kinds of questions about whether they really know who they are targeting in real time. The cost of feeding millions of people whose lives have been torn apart by war should not be paid in blood.
You say this is necessary to eradicate Hamas, but I do wonder when you talk about inconvenient truths, how does Israel justify killing so many innocent people in this? How can you all actually say you're eradicating terrorism and eradicating Hamas in the context of what's actually happening in Gaza?
There has been, as Joe Biden has been worried about and warning about, indiscriminate bombing. These are the stories we know about. We know about these seven aid workers, but we haven't talked about, because it hasn't made the front pages, the other aid workers that have died because of this bombing, indiscriminate bombing. The more the protests rise against Benjamin Netanyahu and the more pressure he feels, the more petrol, so to speak, he throws on the flames. It's just gonna happen because he knows he can't leave power. He gets sent to jail.
As if Israel's trying to kill humanitarian aid workers. The indiscriminate bombing. Yeah, they're going after aid workers in Gaza. That's the way they make it sound. This is insane. This take. It's not even a hot take. This is standard fare for the regime media. Jew hatred of the highest order. Try to find any other subject that they get as stirred up about, righteously indignant about. There's dozens of other conflicts going on around the world, and these same talking heads, they don't care. They don't care who dies in Ukraine or anywhere. It's just Gaza. Because we've got to attack, especially Bibi, but just attack Jews in general. We hate the Jews. You cannot explain this just from a rational perspective unless you understand and know that there is a real spirit world and that the devil, the god of this world, he's leading the charge in this hatred of Jews. For sure. For sure. Again, this is, if you go back, again, you want to look at root causes? Look at Obama's anti-Israel rage. Anti-colonialism, anti-American, bowing before Gentile leaders, and then hatred of the Jews. This is what Obama was known for. This is the Obama doctrine. And Joe Scarborough and company, I mean, they're right on board with it. They love it. They love trashing the Jews. They love attacking Benjamin Netanyahu, even during a time of war, indiscriminate bombing. No, the indiscriminate violence, that happened on October 7th. And Israel unleashed a counteroffensive because of their 9/11 times 20. That's right. They didn't talk about October 7. Not with that kind of a tone. They sorrowed a little bit, but then, like I said, they dusted that off after 24 hours and they moved on to get behind Hamas, to support Hamas. What about the rules of warfare for Hamas? Do they abide by any rules? Here they're holding Israel to this impossibly high standard, indiscriminate bombing. I mean, they've got to pull back. They've got to stop with this counteroffensive. They're aiming for these aid workers. Hamas raped, pillaged, murdered their way through southern Israel on October 7th. Just 6 months ago. Murdered 1,200. How many hostages are they still holding in Gaza? These people, they are, like I said about the Democrat Party in the first segment, they're definitely unified. They all speak, they're not going to tell you about people that are dying in the crossfire. On any other conflict on earth, it's just this one. It's just this one. I mentioned, shifting gears here a little bit, I forget, maybe it was actually in my marriage and family class, but just pointing out the spread of social media and gadgets, devices, and so on. And there was some study that said that for most Americans, they've got basically three friends or less. I was telling the students, I mean, what a blessing it is just to be in God's family. Just to have a family, spiritual and physical. That great commandment in Matthew 22, to love God with all your heart, to love God and his family, and then to love your neighbor as yourself. It's such a wonderful way of life. But this study finds peace on the lonely crowd. It says 40% of adults go days without face-to-face interaction. I mean, this is the trend more and more because of, well, the scamdemic in 2020. People just working now from their basements permanently. You know, in some cases, I suppose that could be a blessing. You don't have to spend as much on fuel and that sort of thing. But we're losing contact with one another. It's very sad. It says, in our hyper-connected world, it may seem like loneliness is a thing of the past. However, a new survey suggests that even in the midst of bustling social lives, many of us are struggling with profound feelings of isolation. The research conducted by OnePoll and commissioned by Zumba polled 2,000 British adults and found that a staggering 40% have gone at least 3 days without a face-to-face conversation with another person. 3 days of isolation. Self-imposed. I mean, they're not locked in prison somewhere. It says even more surprising, 28% reported feeling lonely while at a social event, and a quarter have felt isolated at their workplace. This article says, this lonely in a crowd phenomenon seems to hit young adults the hardest, with 60% of those between 18 and 24 reporting feelings of loneliness. Women were also more likely to feel this way than men. Very, very sad. I mean, my kids are grown, but, you know, my son will still come over from time to time. My daughter lives close by as well, so they pop in all the time. My son came by for a haircut the other night, and my wife and I had a there was a black background. Here you go, a new background for, unless it's just in the studio here, in any event. What a wonderful blessing it is to just be able to have family interaction, family dialogue, robust dialogue, whether it's the physical family or the spiritual. Speaking of family, we've gotten some good feedback of late. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. This viewer writes, "Praise and thanks to the great God, our Father. He rules, he decides, he judges. He is the source and giver of life, and he is the source and giver of how to live. Thank you for the Bible study on Friday. You covered exactly what I needed. God has perfect timing." It says here, "It won't be long now. I am confident. I have proof." I have proof. Another one here coming in from a lady viewer. It says, "Thank you so much for always keeping the truth coming. No matter how bad things get, we have forgotten God and all the sacrifices our forefathers and military has made. I'm so sure they would be ashamed of us. I watch this show every day and read all the briefs, and I read the magazine as well. I want to know everything. Now I want the Flynn movie. I'm going to get it from Amazon. I really like listening to General Flynn." And as I said yesterday, just be aware of the fact that the Amazon version of the show does have quite a few swear words. So you'll definitely want to avoid showing it to little children. For sure. The viewing that we're going to make available to a public audience on April 14th will have those words silenced, so you won't have to hear that. If you're planning to come and watch that Flynn documentary on April 14th, you can go to, I think it was flynnmovie.com, if my memory serves me. You can go to that website and look to where he's going to be visiting over the course of these next few months. It says here, "All he and his family have gone through," speaking of the Flynn family, "causes me to be very emotional. My heart goes out to him and his family. I know God is protecting them and the whole Philadelphia Church of God family. Keep up the good work, and I will be watching for his next interview with you." Yes, indeed. Hopefully, we might record it ahead of time like we did last week, but hopefully when he's in town, On that Sunday, we can at the very least sit down with him and record a segment, or maybe record a segment at Armstrong Auditorium. We'll see how that it works out. But you can look forward to seeing him again on the show on the Trumpet Daily soon, hopefully. It says here, "The interview with General Flynn was another fantastic and exciting Trumpet Daily. It always gives me a lot to think about. One thing I especially liked was Mr. Flynn's point on why he does what he does. He thought about the many sacrifices people have made over 250 years of history in this country. And he said we need to fight for this country the same way that they did, because we love it. Fight for what you love." It says, "Whether Mr. Flynn recognized it or not, he expressed a deep principle that God lives by. Everything God does is out of love. I've come to believe that more and more." She says here, "I wanted to truly thank you for all the work you pour into the Trumpet Daily. It's just one way this great work sends the message God is trying to get to the entire world. God, his angels, and his people are uniting for the love of the future God family soon to be on this earth." If you'd like to submit some feedback to this show, you can reach us via email, td@thetrumpet.com. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we will see you again tomorrow.